Sri Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. So when we're thoroughly disgusted with material life and frustrated and fed up with it, we reject it. Then we take shelter of a spiritual master. At that time, we must accept the spiritual master with full faith. So Diksha is what is called the spiritual master's formal acceptance of the disciple's commitment and faith. Without this commitment of faith and commitment, a disciple cannot possess the unyielding faith required to properly assimilate his guru's spiritual instructions. So Jiva Goswami is discussing why do we need to become initiated if the holy name is so powerful? Just by touching the holy name or chanting the holy name, the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna Mantra, slightly, without even undergoing Diksha, that we can get results, that we get some kind of fruit, and that it eradicates so many great sins. And why? What's the bother? Why do we have to get initiated? We can just sit down alone and chant Hare Krishna. So he says, yes, there's unlimited potency in the holy name, but all the great devotees and Mahajans, such as Narada Muni, they first accepted Diksha from their gurus, and then they performed their sadhana and bhajan in the worship of their Ishtadeva, which means the beloved deity in their heart. So anyone who desires to follow in the footsteps of these great devotees like Narada, he must also accept Diksha and do Bhagavad Mantra from Sri Gurudev. Because without accepting Diksha, one's relationship with Bhagavan Sri Krishna as Dasya, Sakya, etc. cannot be awakened. That relationship is established only by the lotus feet of Sri Guru. The custom of Diksha was honored by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. It is prevalent even today in their followers. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur clearly said that those persons who have abandoned karma, gyan, yoga, jap, tap, and other processes of sadhana, and who have accepted Bhagavan as their Ishtadeva, who are engaged in Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam, Bhagavan Nam, but who have not accepted Diksha from a Vaishnava Guru according to the Vaishnava regulations, they cannot attain the Supreme Lord. They will merely be prevented from entering hell or in their next birth by the influence of the bhajan performed in a previous life. They will attain Sadhu Sangha. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is making a very powerful statement here. He says, listen, You can be just absorbed in hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna's name and following all the rules of Vaishnavism, the do's and the don'ts, and worshipping even Krishna and having accepted Bhagavan as your worshipful Lord, your Ishtadev. But still you won't go back to Godhead because you have not... You won't go to hell by doing all this spiritual activity or Sukriti or pious works. You'll be prevented from going to hell. But because you have not accepted actual Diksha from a guru according to Vaishnava regulations, then, although you'll be protected from going to hell, you won't obtain Sadhu Sangha. You will obtain Sadhu Sangha. In other words, two things happen. If you don't get initiated, you won't go to hell. If you practice bhakti and chant Hare Krishna, you won't go to hell. And because of that diksha that we perform, I mean that sadhana that we perform, in our next life we'll get to associate with sadhus. Then maybe in that life we'll get a chance to take diksha. In the shastras, sometimes there's statements where it says that women and shudras are prohibited from worshipping Shalagram Shila. However, these descriptions do not apply to persons who have taken Diksha. They are intended for those who have not received Diksha. Itavadi Diksham Grihitva Bhagavat Puja Pare Sadbir Iyartaha Tatra Bhagavantam Dharman Shikshed Gorvatam Daivata Amaya yana vritya yais tushyadatmaram tohari. So that was the second one. Second quality. In all these first few practices, there are 64 practices listed. Some doing puja, some some reading, many different things. The first four or five are all about guru. Finding guru, accepting guru, surrendering to guru, serving guru, loving guru. And so guru is so important. So here he's bringing out different ideas. Well, what if I, can I chant Hare Krishna and read the books, spiritual books, and not have a guru? Yes, you can. Okay, then fine. So then they say, yes, you do that, but you won't go to the spiritual world. You won't get spiritual perfection. You'll get something, but you won't get the full perfection that you're entitled to. What you'll get is, you'll increase your qualification when you die and take another birth. In your next life, because of that qualification, then you will meet a guru and you will get Diksha. So it's all positive, it's all progressive. It all leads to the right end. But it's not the end in itself to just simply engage in bhakti without guru. Even when God comes himself, he accepts guru. Ramchandra had Vasishtha Muni as his guru. Krishna had Santipani Muni as his guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had Ishvara Puri and Kesava Bharati as his guru. Prahlad Maharaj, he was 5 years old and he was a preacher. And he was preaching about Krishna in school. And he said, Komara Acha Pragyo Dharma Bhagavatamiham. He said, even from the beginning, you should start behaving as a Komara. As a 5-year-old boy, you should start practicing Bhagavad Dharma. So if we're more than 5 years old, then we're long overdue. We should have guru by 10 years old, take initiation, or 12 years old. In other words, we're in a precarious position and we should try to secure a relationship with guru as fast as possible and at least establish our official relationship with Krishna so that he'll look after us more personally and individually, and so we'll be more secure in our position and spiritual footing. So if we do die by the blessings of our guru, we won't go too far down or transmigrate to any other bad species of life because of Guru's blessings. Guru is special. Guru is a mercy incarnation. He is the embodiment of blessing, kindness. So even though we may have a hard time, because we're surrendered to Guru and connected to Guru, he can pick us up. He can help us along and do that. We can maybe walk. We can walk up the path. We can walk up the mountain. But if the Guru comes along with a horse, and he picks us up and puts us on the back of the horse, how fast we can go up the mountain on a horse, or a donkey, or a mule, or something. So Guru is that he's moving very fast, and with his assistance, with his help, with his connection, we can also start traveling very fast on the spiritual path. Chanting, hearing, visiting sadhus, visiting India, visiting holy places, it's all good. It's all accumulating. And it's building up in our bank account. And eventually we can buy a good car. But as we meet some wealthy man, and we surrender that wealthy man, say, oh, wealthy man, can I serve you? And we serve that wealthy man, and we cut his grass, and we take care of his garden, trim his roses, and we wash his car and paint his house. And one day he might say, oh, you're a very good man. You've done some good services. Is there something you want? He said, yes, I want to buy one BMW car, 8.35. You know, costly car. Oh yeah, you take, here you take. He gives. But on our own, it would take so many years and years to save the money, maybe even lifetimes, save enough money to buy that car. But because we're connected with that rich man, and he likes us, and he's kind to us, he just gives us that car. So it's a very simplistic analogy. But it's a comparison to show you that on your own, it'll take so long to get up to the spiritual platform. And even then, all you can do is get to the point where you get guru. So if you can do everything on your own, you do on your own life after life after life. And finally, after so many lifetimes of endeavor, trying to get perfection, you have enough purchasing power to get guru. Then guru will do the rest. He'll help you so much. Provide what you lack and preserve what you have. That's why guru is so essential, necessary. So if you become very much determined and very much desirous, intensely desirous of spiritual perfection, very
very eager for that, then you'll be eager to get connected with Guru, because then you can get that perfection you're hankering for. Well, I want this thing. Well, how do I get this thing? Well, if you get Guru, then you easily get this thing. Oh, then let me get Guru, because I want this thing. And Guru will give it to me. Kripa karo. Guru, give me mercy. I want this love of Krishna. I want this go to the spiritual world. How do I get that? Oh, you need Guru. Oh, okay. Well, where's Guru? Who's Guru? Oh, this is a Guru. You see him. Oh, he's a Guru. I don't know. I don't like. Oh, okay. Then go to this Guru. Oh, yeah. This Guru is nice. But if he's really qualified, he can do everything he's supposed to do. Yeah. Everyone says so. Okay. Maybe I see. Oh, I like this Guru. I have faith in this Guru. I believe in this Guru. I trust this Guru. Opening all the doors and answering all my questions. Then I say, oh Guruji, please you be nice to me and give me some mantras to help me connect myself with God. You accept me as your disciple. So that's the beginning, that's stage one. It's called initiation. The word initiation in English means beginning. Start. You start. Then God's service really, that's when it really begins. Otherwise, it's only like practice, getting ready to do the real thing. Run, you'll rush for it, you'll run for it, you'll beg for it, you'll search for it. Maybe. Krishna's controlling everything.
Indeed, I have a lot of faith.
Yeah, it's a good thing. No, that's the first thing. It's called Shastra. Shastriya Shraddha. The one actually has faith in the Shastras, or that means spiritual books. Shastras, faith in the spiritual books, holy teachings. And he has faith in a particular path, faith in Buddhism, faith in yoga, faith in bhakti. Some path appeals to him. But then he finds people on that path, teachers, spiritual teachers, gurus, masters, whatever. And then he develops faith in them. In the combination of these two faiths, then he starts beginning following the path also. Then he has experience, his own individual experience and realizations about that path, about Buddhism or about bhakti or yoga or gyan or meditation. And that increases his faith, increases his determination, increases his enthusiasm. Oh yes, I'm on a good path. This is a very good path. And I like this path. This is my path. And even he meets someone on a Buddhist path. Oh, why didn't you be a Buddhist? This is very good. He said, no, I don't like it. This is my path. I like too much this path. And it's individual taste and relish and experience which makes one very firm and determined on his own path. It's like a very staunch and fixed up Buddhist, he can't change. You can't change him from his viewpoint or his goal or his aspiration. And the same way you meet a Vaishnava or a worshipper of Vishnu or Krishna, he's very, also maybe very fixed. And he can't change either. He's very rigid and determined on his path. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 3rd verse, Chapter 22 says, Tatra Bhagavatan Dharman Shikshed Gurvatma Devata Amaya Yana Vritya Yais Tushyad Atmatma Dohari. One should know that Sri Gurudev is one's supreme benefactor, that means helper. He's the supreme friend and most worshipful deity, the direct personification of Hari. One should always follow the spiritual master without duplicity, means like cheating, and take instructions from him about Bhagavad Dharma, that means the religion of serving the personality of Godhead. By this practice, the Supreme Lord becomes pleased and gives himself to the disciple. So if Guru is pleased, then Krishna is pleased, and if Krishna is pleased by our
service to Guru, our relationship with Guru, our dealings with Guru, then Krishna will give himself to us. Just like a rich man, if he has a son, and then you make friends with the son, and you have a very good relationship with the son, you play with him and you help him, and the son, he tells the father, "Oh, Father, this man, he's very kind to me, and he helps me so much, and he's a very good friend of mine." And the father will say, "Oh, really? He's your good friend. And he helps you so much, and he serves you, and you feel so much appreciation to him, for him, and gratitude. Well, then let me do something for him." So then he comes to you and says, "You're helping my son too much, and you're pleasing my son, and you're making my son happy, so I want to give you some reward. I want to give you a gift. Here's $20 million. And you say, "Oh, that's very good. Thank you." Something like that. So we please the Guru, and Guru is a son of God. He's a child of God. He's a representative of God. So then God becomes pleased. And God, he has no shortages. He has no deficiencies. He's not lacking anything. He's the source of everything and controls and owns everything. So whatever we need, whatever we want, whatever we require, then God will easily and quickly and effortlessly provide it for us. Ananyas chintiyantomam ye jana praipashite te shanityabhyuktanam yoga shimam laham yaham. Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. In the ninth chapter, he says, those are ananya chinta. Chinta means their consciousness or their mind is ananya. It has no other focus, no other fixation, no other meditation than God. Always thinking of God, remembering God, working for God, speaking about God, singing about God, feeling for God, desiring for God. Then, yoga shemam baham yam. Krishna, he preserves whatever good things that person has, he keeps them intact, and he provides whatever that person lacks. Whatever he needs, whatever he's missing, then God personally arranges for him. He needs some place to stay, and some place to serve his friends and worship his deity, then the Lord provides for him. If he needs some clothes, if he needs anything, Krishna provides for his devotees. Just like the father provides for his children. Medicine he gives them, education he gives them, clothing, food, shelter, nourishment, that's food, and emotional support, and philosophical encouragement. So many good things the father gives to the children. So what to speak of the Supreme Father, Sri Krishna, what he gives to his beloved spiritual children. So we all have direct experience of that also. That one day we may have nothing and be on the street and have nothing, nowhere to live and nothing to eat. Next day we have like Alice in Wonderland or Cinderella or something. Within a few days we have a beautiful place to live and facility to serve our friends and so God is very kind. Of course, the devotee, the child of God or the servant of God, Krishna's devotee, he always feels grateful. He never feels deserving. He feels, "I don't deserve any of this. And I'm not very worthy. But my Lord is so kind and so generous that he's giving all these things to me, even though I'm such a poor servant and such a unqualified worshiper of him, but nevertheless, he's overlooking all my deficiencies and all my inadequacies and all my lack of devotion and all my lack of love and disregarding all that and simply showering me with all his kindness and mercy to encourage me to just show his wonderful nature." So this is the third principle of devotional service, serving the spiritual master with faith and confidence. And in Sanskrit, this word is Vishrambena Gauror Seva. Vishramba. There's two words in Sanskrit. One is Gaurava, and Vishramba. And Gaurava means respect, the most respectful, the most honored, respectful. It's an official title, Gaurava. And it also describes Sakiras, or Gaurava Sakiras, which is very, one is a friend of Krishna, but there's some distance. And that's in, of course, Sakiras is only in Brajagokul. There's no Sakiras in Vaikuntha with Vishnu. There's no such thing. But Krishna has a category of servants that live in his house, Raktak and Patrak and Patri, and so many boys there. They're a little younger than him. And they render services, bathing him, massaging him, dressing him, etc. in Nandagaon. And they're doing seva and dasyava, but they're friends because they're about the same age. They're in Sakiras with the predominance of dasya. But they're in Sakirati, friendship. But it's a little official. They can't, like, they're not of the intimacy where they could take some sweets and say, oh, Krishna, look what my mother made me. She made me a little tiffin to take as a snack. Because they also have their mothers. And then you take some. They don't have the intimacy. They can't, like, bite a brass gula and say, Krishna, you take it. Because this is called Gaurava. Gaurava Sakiras. It's some distance, some formality, some respect in their friendship. Like official friendship, maybe you can say. Awe and reverence is there. But now, there's another type of friendship called Vishramba. So Vishramba, the word Vishramba, means very intimate friendship. Very near and dear friends. They wrestle together. If I defeat you, you have to carry me on your shoulders. If you defeat me, I have to carry you. I can take food out of your mouth and eat it. You can take food from my plate. I can wear your clothes. You can wear my clothes. We sleep in the same bed together. If I'm tired, I'll rest on your leg. If you're tired, you'll rest on my leg, your head. Like this, Vishramba. So this is the word that Rupa Goswami uses to describe the shishya, or disciples' seva bhav, or attitude towards his guru. Vishramba guru seva. Vishrambena gurur seva. That one should serve the guru with great friendship. With a very intimate mood of friendship. Like he's my bosom buddy. He's like my older brother. He's my protector, but he's near and dear to me. I can confide in him. I can reveal my mind to him. I can trust him absolutely with my most guarded secrets. And I have full faith in him. And I can depend on him. And I can share with him. And he will always help me. And I don't have to be like nervous around him. So this is also told in 7th canto of Bhagavatam by Narada Muni. In his instructions on Varnashram Dharma, he's talking about the Brahmachari Ashram. He says, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandantur Gurohitam Guru Sudrita Sorida Guru Sudrita Sorida. That the Brahmachari, living in the house of the spiritual master, the Gurukula, he has Sudrida, very, very firm, like heart, Rida. Rida means Sudrida. Sorida. Sorida means heart-to-heart friendship with the spiritual master. Very, very thick and thin relationship. Just like Arjuna and Krishna on the chariot. They were such friends. They were such close friends. They would eat together, sleep together. They would do everything together. They're very, very intimate. So this is how one should serve the guru. One person translates this Vishramba. Prabhupada says, with faith and confidence. And one translator says, with zest and delight. he translates Vishramba as zest, Z-E-S-T. I don't know how to exactly say what that means, but it means very enthusiastically, very happily, enthusiastically and with a lot of happiness, a lot of joy in that enthusiasm. Like someone may enthusiastically do their work because they're getting paid, and the boss says, okay, you work tonight after hours, I'll give you double time, I'll give you overtime because we have to get this work done quickly. So they, oh, okay, I'm going to pay you twice as much now, you work enthusiastically. So he's working enthusiastically, but that's not with zest. That's not zest. But zest is you're working enthusiastically with a great loving joy. The only thing is like there's some love mixed in there, some joy. You're enthusiastic, but you're thrilled about it. It's not like, I'm enthusiastic because he's paying me two times more. And he's also watching me, so I'm showing my enthusiasm. But this zest means enthusiasm that springs from the heart. It springs from a heart saturated with love for the person you're working for. I would say like that, zest. Zest and delight is Vishramba. So you can see that faith and confidence, okay, but Vishramba has faith and confidence. The word seems a little subdued. Oh yes, I'm serving my guru with faith and confidence. When you say zest and delight, it's like, oh, that's something. So all those things are there. Faith and confidence are there, but zest. But Vishramba has this meaning. It's a very good choice of words by the translator. That's Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhan Maharaj. So then, the Praman that Rupa Goswami cites here is from the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna is telling about this. He's telling Uddhava about Guru Tattva, 11th canto of Bhagavatam. This is 17th chapter, verse 27, where the famous verse where he says, Acharya Maha Vijaniyam Navamanyanti Karichit. It says, Sarvadeva Maya Guru. You should say, Acharya Maha Vijaniyam. You should know that the Acharya is not different from me. Yeah. Krishna is telling Uddhava, hey, Uddhava, you should know that my spiritual masters, my gurus, they're like me. They're me. Acharya Maha Vijaniyam. Vijani. You should know very thoroughly, Vijani, like Janta. You should understand and know very thoroughly, Vijani, that the Acharya mam means me, the Acharya is me. The Guru is Krishna. Krishna's representation, or Krishna's mercy representation, Krishna's karuna representation, Krishna's knowledge representation, Krishna's audarya representation. The Guru is all these things and more. Sometimes they say Guru is father, Guru is friend, Guru's husband, mother, wife, everything. The true guru, the Sadguru. So, in we have some other discussions here about this point. Also, you can read here. The actual verse is I think I have it here. Acharya Maham Vijaniyan Navamanyeta Karichit Namartya Buddhya Suyeta Sarvadeva Mayaguru Namartya Buddhya Suyeta. You should never, out of envy, think that the guru is a martya. Martya means the land of death, like mrityu. That never think that the guru is an ordinary mortal being. His material body may come and go, but what he represents and what he is in terms of spiritual reality, a spiritual position, that's eternal. He's not an ordinary mortal because he's Shakti Avesh. He's Shakti Vesh. Ordinary mortals, they come and go, but they're not Nityananda Shakti or Guru Shakti. They're not empowered by the Lord. They're not possessing or absorbed in the spiritual potency of the Lord. They're not ambassadors of God. They may be the ambassador to Germany or Sweden representing that country's interest in the United Nations, but the Guru is the ambassador of God representing God's interest in this planet. So as God is completely spiritual and his interests are completely spiritual, the Guru is similarly positioned. So he cites that verse that the spiritual master should always be seen as a representative of God. So this is what he says: it by hearing faithfully from the spiritual master. After hearing faithfully from the spiritual master, one becomes elevated to the platform of offering faithful, loving service. Because when you hear from the spiritual master, then our illusions are removed and we become very established, fixed up and established on the platform of sadhana bhakti and our Krishna sambandha, relationship with God, our understanding, who is God, who am I, what is the actual purpose of life, and how to move towards God and practice sadhana bhakti. So we feel some gratitude that, oh, the Guru has given me so much. He's actually given me God. He's given me the path of self-realization. He's illuminated my mind. He's answered all my questions, removed all my doubts and fears, and given me new hope in life, new prospects. And therefore I'm very, I feel indebted. So how can I pay the debt? He doesn't need money, he doesn't need anything, but maybe I can serve him in some way. So that's naturally when gratitude arises, then one will feel inspired to render some service to the Guru. So after hearing for some time, then the disciple wants to offer faithful, loving service. So then Rupa Goswami supports this idea by saying that, quoting Krishna's verse, where the Acharya should be accepted as the Lord's very self. Understanding the importance of service to the Supreme Lord and knowing the spiritual master be not different from him, the disciple must serve the Guru with strong faith. In this regard, you know, Vishnu Chakravartipad, he gives a commentary, as does Jiva Goswami, on the nectar devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami, he compiled this book by citing various Vedic references to explain the principles and practices of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So it's quite a powerful presentation on its own. But nevertheless, Rupa Goswami asked Jiva Goswami that he should write commentary on the nectar devotion. So he did. And that commentary is available in different places. So sometimes he makes some interesting points. Because Krishna, in this verse from 11th canto Uddhava Gita, describing the oneness of Guru with Krishna, Acharya Mam Vijaniyam, he says, you should know the Guru is not different from myself. So Jiva elaborates on that statement, Acharya Mam Vijaniyam, that this means, know the Guru as myself, actually means that the Guru is one who is dear to Krishna. The Guru is Preshta. Jiva Goswami uses this word Preshta. Like we have the word Priya, Priyaji. We say Radharani is Priyaji and Krishna is Priyatam. It's Priya Uttam, the topmost Priya. This is an exchange of love between Radha and Krishna. Where Krishna says, oh Priyaji, you're my everything. I love you more than anyone. How could you ever think that I would run off to any other gopi? This is a false rumor. Who is telling you that I was with some other gopi? You're my everything. I would never go with any other gopi. Why do you think like this? You're my Priyaji. Then if Radharani, if she falls for that, sometimes she's submissive, and she believes that, then she says, oh yes, I am your Priyaji, and you're my Priyatam. So that's like someone says, it's like in English, if someone says, oh, you're really great. You're very great. And then you reply by saying, no, yes, but you're the greatest. So I'm telling you, you're great. So then you feel quite good. But then you return my compliment by saying, but you're the greatest. Which means, that means I'm greater than you, right? I'm the greatest. So then I feel, oh, you feel that way about me? So Krishna called Radharani Priyaji, or Priya, Priyaji. So then she returned that compliment by doubling his compliment by saying, oh, I'm Priya, Priyaji, but you're Priyatam. You understand? Kanishta Madhyam Uttam. Uttama. Tama means ignorance. And Ut means beyond, to rise. Uto. Rising way far above. Way above ignorance is goodness. And way above goodness is pure goodness. So Priyatam. So this word Preshta is like that. It's a high level of Priya, Preshta. So Jiva Goswami is saying that the Guru is special because it's a little confusing when you read the verse in 11th canto. It says Acharya Mam Vijaniyan, that you should understand, Uddhava, that the Guru is not different from me. The Guru is me. The Guru is my very self. Acharya Mam. Acharya Mam. Guru is me. Mam. Acharya is me. Guru is me. I mean, Guru is Krishna. Right? Sakshat Hari. Sakshat Hari. Samasta Sasa. We sing that song, right? Daritaina. Guru Vastakam. Jiva Goswami says, no, it doesn't exactly mean that the Guru is Krishna, but it means that the Guru is most dear to Krishna. He's Preshta. So therefore, when one of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's sannyasi disciples, maybe Bhakti Vilas Tirtha, he wrote a pranam prayer to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, which became highly appreciated. And our Guru Maharaj used the same prayer, or someone used it and he approved it. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Itinam. Originally the prayer was this, Bhakti Siddhanta. Then we made it Bhakti Vedanta, as you know. So in that pranam prayer, the Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, the two Srila Prabhupadas, says, Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya. This, our Gurudev, he is situated, he's surrendered and sheltered at Vishnupad, at the feet of Vishnu, the original Vishnu, Sarva Avatari Vishnu, Swayam Bhagavan Vishnu, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. He's situated at the feet of Sri Krishna, and Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya. He is very dear to Krishna. He's Acharya Mahavi Janayan. So Jiva gave us a little bit of more flavor to this verse. And just a little more comments that can be made also here in this regard. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion. There's Vishnu Chakravartipad. As I mentioned, the two most famous commentaries, although there are many commentaries on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Mukundadas, whoever that is, but someone named Mukundadas, and many contemporaries. I mean, Srila Prabhupada wrote a commentary. Our Srila Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion has so much commentary on the shlokas. He has the shlokas, and in between that he has many commentaries, pages sometimes of commentary. So the most popular commentary on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu worldwide is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada's, right? Because how many Hebrew editions of Rupa Goswami's of Vishwanath's commentaries do you find? How many Chinese editions of Jiva Goswami's commentaries do you find on Nectar Devotion? You don't find any. But Prabhupada's book, Nectar Devotion, which is the verses plus his commentary, is translated in 80 languages. So, therefore, that's why I'm saying that the commentary of Srila Prabhupada on Nectar Devotion is the most popular. But because Jiva Goswami's commentary is in Sanskrit, it's in Bengali, it's in Hindi, and to some extent it's in English, so it's in 3 or 4 languages. But Prabhupada's commentary on Nectar Devotion is in like 80 languages. You follow what I'm saying? So that's a great pride for us, because we're followers of Prabhupada, and we're his Diksha and Shiksha followers, disciples, all of us. So we're very happy that Prabhupada's tikkas are so much prevalent. But of course, they're not only his tikkas, because he often includes Vishwanath inside of his tikkas and also Jiva's. But Vishwanath has his commentary. In this particular point, Vishrambena Gurur Seva, which is what it says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he translates as Priti Purvaka Guru Seva. Priti Purvaka Guru Seva. Purvaka means like Purva Rag, means beginning or preliminary love before meeting. Purvaka means there should before our service, it should begin with love. So Priti, like Priti Sandarva, Priti means love. This kind of special, sweet, intimate love. So he says that, he quotes the same verse, and he says a little bit different. He says that Prabhupada translates the verse like this, the 11th canto of Uddhava Gita. Uddhava, the spiritual master must be accepted not only as my representative, but as my very self. He must never be considered on the same level with an ordinary man. Buddhita, right? Martya. Buddhita. Buddhisut. Martya. He must... one should never be envious of the spiritual master as one is envious of an ordinary man. The spiritual master should always be seen as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by serving the spiritual master, one is able to serve all the demigods. This is a rather unique translation. Prabhupada says, Sarva Deva Mayoguru. Because there's no word there, Seva. Sarva Deva Mayoguru, Deva Maya Guru. That generally, Deva Maya, Sarva Deva means all the demigods, Maya means the energy. Deva Maya Guru means in the Guru. So most, no one translates it like Prabhupada does. But Prabhupada translates that for different purposes. I would surmise that one purpose he translates that is to dissuade anyone from thinking they have to independently worship demigods or serve them, which is quite big in India. So by reading this, someone will think, oh, it says here in Uddhava Gita, by serving the spiritual master, Sarvadeva Maya Guru, one is able to serve all the demigods. So if I am my Gurudev, and I serve him, and then I don't have to worry about doing Shiva Puja, and Indra Puja, and Surya Puja, and Durga Puja, and all these other pujas. But Prabhupada is very nice. And I can understand why Prabhupada is saying that, because he's always thinking of many things when he translates. Like you'll see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya gathered all his devotees and performed non-sankirtan. That's what it says. It's sub-bhakta log, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhya sub-bhakta log, sambhakta log, harinam sankirtan uchai. He gathered all the devotees together and chanted loudly nam sankirtan. So then Prabhupada writes in English, Lord Chaitanya joined together with all his followers and chanted the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So the word in Bengali is nam sankirtan. That can be Govinda Jaya Jaya, Gopala Jaya Jaya. So many things are nam, so much Krishna nam. Govinda nam, Gopinath nam, Hari Haraya Namakrishna, Krishna Krishna Krishna. My Prabhupada said, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because Prabhupada wants to, there's only one mantra. This is the Mahamantra, and this is all anyone should chant, and they should be encouraged from all sides, from Shastra, from Gurus, and from Sadhu, to simply chant Hare Krishna. Hari Nam, Hari Nam, Hari Nam Eva Kevalam. That was Prabhupada's Bhav. That was his Prachar Bhavana. That was his mood of a preacher. All we need to do is chant Hare Krishna. And the only person we need to worship is Krishna. That's his bhava, and it's also the conclusion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all acharyas. And Prabhupada is very fixed on that idea. So whenever he has a chance to kind of like twist things or give a little bit poetic license, then he does. So Prabhupada just cuts out all the thrills and frills and gives the essence. I love this. Krishna is telling Uddhava, you serve the Guru and you serve all the demigods. So Vishwanath gives his commentary and he says that all those anarthas, unwanted things which cannot be removed, even by rigid practice of sadhana, and you're very rigidly chanting and hearing and reading and observing ekadasi and doing parikrama and circumambulation and archana, puja and chanting astakams and doing so many things, taking care of tulsi. But still, there's deep-rooted anarthas that even the most rigid sadhana won't remove. But by serving the Guru, they're easily destroyed. If you serve the Guru without duplicity, that means with straightforwardness, that's the power of Guru. That's the mercy of Guru. That's why the same Vishwanath wrote the Guru Vastakam, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasado Yasya Prasada Nagati Gatovi, which he quotes here in his verse. The mercy of Sri Guru is itself the mercy of Bhagavan. If one has the mercy of Sri Guru, then even if Bhagavan is displeased, the spiritual master will take responsibility to please God. But if the spiritual master is displeased, then Bhagavan will never forgive such an offender. Therefore, considering the spiritual master to be one's supreme friend, which one should serve him with great love. This is the real meaning of Vishramba. Vishrambena Gurur Seva. We should consider the spiritual master to be our supreme friend, our heart-to-heart friend, our bosom friend. And we should serve him with great love. The Shastras say that we should possess para-bhakti towards Sri Bhagavan and also possess bhakti towards the lotus feet of Gurudev. Otherwise, all one's efforts in sadhana and bhajan will bear no fruit. Shvetashvatara Upanishad says, 6.2.3, Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru, taisyate katita kyarta prakashante mahatmana. For one who has para bhakti, as that term is there, Yasya deve para bhaktir, for one who has para bhakti towards the Supreme Lord and towards Sri Gurudev, it says, Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru. So deve means God and guru means guru. If you have this kind of para bhakti for guru and God or guru and Krishna, then prakash hyarta katita hyarta, all the conclusions in the Shastras regarding the supreme ultimate reality of Krishna become prakash, manifest in his heart. For those who have no bhakti towards the lotus feet of the spiritual master, the conclusions of the Shastra are not revealed. So, this is a very nice explanation of serving the spiritual master with love, with zest and delight, with faith and confidence. These are all good things. As a friend, thinking of him to be a best friend. So one should serve the spiritual master with faith and confidence, zest and delight, friendship and love. In the end of the Guru Vastakam, which we sing every morning, either alone or with a group in kirtan, it says, Srimad Gurur Ashtakam Etaduchai Brahma Muhurte Padati Prayatnat Yastena Vrindavana Nata Sakshat Sevaiva Labhya Janashanta Eva. This is called the Shruti fall, or the fall Shruti. Whenever you chant an Ashtakam or some prayer, Radha Kripa Kataksha or Krishna Kripa Kataksha or Yamuna Ashtakam or Vrindavan Ashtakam or Guru Ashtakam or Sad Goswami Ashtakam, usually at the end there's a ninth shloka or a tenth or twelfth or whatever that you chant, that which you are supposed to chant, and that tells you anyone who sings this song or chants this prayer, he gets this particular benefit. And the Radha Kripa Kataksha says anyone who chants this prayer, he gets the mercy of Radharani and all these things. And then it has many, many Shruti falls, and many, many fall Shrutis, many, many verses, and you chant the one that applies to your situation. Like if you're chanting and it happens to be the Devi Kadasi, then you chant the Shruti fall that describes anyone who chants this prayer on Dasami, Kadasi, or Trayodasi with concentrated attention and mind, we get the full blessings of Radharani, and all his karmas will be destroyed. It's called the benefits, the blessings, the boons, the benedictions. So in the same way, we sing Samsara Dhavana Liraka Chanaya Karanya Ganaganatpam Praptasya Kalyana Gunanavasya Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. So if we sing this, Brahma Muhurte Patiti Prayatnat, at the time of Brahma Muhurta, which is begins 1.5 hours before sunrise and ends 1 hour before sunrise. It's a Muhurta, so it's 48 minutes. So sunrise is roughly 6:30. So by 5:30, Brahma Muhurta is over. So from 5 a.m. to roughly 5 a.m. to 5:30, 5:35 in the morning, right now in Vrindavan, that is called Brahma Muhurta. So that time is a very good time to meditate on the form of the Lord, pastimes of the Lord, your own sarup, or the lotus feet of Guru, because the mind is very still. The mind is very soft, the mind is very pliable, the mind is very receptive, and the mind can easily capture and record spiritual vibrations. It's called manovritti. Manovritti means thought waves or vibrations. So at that particular time, the mind is extremely pliable. It's like soft clay. But then once you put the clay in the oven and fire it up, then it becomes like glazed, it becomes like a hard rock. You understand? But before that, you can add some water to it and shape it this way and stretch it and roll it and knead it and do whatever you want. So the mind is like that for 48 minutes every day. It's very pliable like soft clay. So whatever impressions or grooves or thoughts or ideas you inject into the mind or cultivate or impress in the mind at that time will stay with you for all day or at least a long time. And other times in the day, the mind is rather dull. It's rather covered, rather impenetrable, and rather hard to create any impression in. This is the whole idea, Brahma Muhurta. So the benediction there is, if anyone, Vishnu Chakravarti, who gave the prayer, says, anyone who chants this prayer, Brahma Muhurta, loudly, Sri Srimad Guru Ashtakam Etat Uchai, Uchai means loudly, then what happens to him? Yastena Vrindavananatha Shakshat Sivaya Labhya. Labhya means he gains, like lobe. He gains or acquires sakshat seva. Sakshat means direct, seva means service. Of whom? Who does he get service of? Maya? His wife or husband? Seva of Vishnu or Narayan? No, Vrindavanath. Vrindavanath, sakshat sivaya lavya janashanta. Jana anta. Janoshanta. At the end of the body, at the end of life. And the end of life means not only when the demise of the body, that's the end of life, but it also means Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. As soon as we end our material life and become self-realized, we also gain the service of Vrindavanath. Iha yasya harira dasya karmana manasagira. Jiva mukta siyuchate. Rupa Goswami quotes this verse that you become liberated even in this life if your mind, body, and words are karmana manasagira. Mind, body, and words are dedicated to the service of Hari, Hari dasya. So you don't have to die. You have to die to live, as Hegel said. Sridhar Maharaj would often quote this phrase. One has to die to live. So once our false ego dies, once our material conceptions die, once our mundane identities die in our upadis, sarvupadi vinir muktam, we become liberated from our upadis. Upadi means designations. When we become free from our designations, I am man, I am woman, I am fat, thin, strong, weak, beautiful, ugly, poor, rich, Indian, American, Swiss, German, Swedish. When we transcend all that, then we're liberated. So if and our body is engaged in Krishna sense, a service, and our senses and mind and as Haridas, then we're actually liberated. So then that means we've attained the Sakshat Seva of Vrindavanath. So to help us come very quickly to that platform, we are requested to, or we are promised a benediction by Vishwanath if we sing this song every day, Brahmahartha, or sing to ourselves or whatever. I know that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas all across the board, I don't know anyone, Nityananda Sampradaya, Advaita Sampradaya, Gadadhar Sampradaya, everyone sings this song in the morning, especially now in Kartik because of Niyam Seva. You hear some people on loudspeakers, and Shamsundar Mandir and others, because I used to live over there, nearby. At about, right before Mangalarti, one devotee comes out playing harmonium, a very nice raga, some raga for that time of the day, melody, tune. He sings this, Samsara Da, I can only think of the only one tune I know. But he sings this Samsara prayers around 3:30 in the morning. Very beautiful raga. So I know that many, many, whether they're Bhajanandi sadhus or whoever they are, they, in their own kutir, they sing this song and recite the Shruti Phal. Because it's so important. Vishwanath is not a small-time personality. He's a Nitya Siddha Manjari of Radharani. If you know Manjari. So he's giving that blessing. So I think we'll start tomorrow with following the footsteps of saintly persons. It's called Sadhu Vart Manuvartante. Vishwanath calls it Sadhu Marganu. Sadhu Marg Anusara. Following the path of the sadhus. So we'll, tomorrow we'll follow in the footsteps of the sadhus and hear from Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada and Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravartipad. Because these are the most important. Actually, these first three are the most important of all the most important and primary of all the 64 limbs of devotion. Because they're all about guru, right? Guru Padashraya, taking shelter of guru. Diksha Shikshadi, taking diksha and shiksha from the spiritual master, and serving him with zest and delight. Faith and confidence, love and devotion, Vishrambhena Guru Seva. These are the first three of the 64 limbs of bhakti, Bhakti Yanga. And they are told later by Rupa Goswami, and it's also very obvious, that these three are the most important. Because one may do all the other things. He may not have a guru, but he may follow saints and hear from them. And he may worship deities and follow so many rules and regulations and engage in a lot of the hearing, chanting, living in a holy place, hearing Bhagavatam. These are all limbs of devotion. But if one doesn't have a spiritual master, it's very difficult to attain perfection in these ways. So this is why it starts this way. And the most important one is the first one.
Guru Padashraya, this is what Rupa Goswami says, this is the most important, and the two after are the next most important. The taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, which is not easy. Not easy to find a bona fide spiritual master. Sadguru and Sadshishya. Generally they say it's more difficult to find Sadshishya. Sadgurus are there, and when Sadshishyas are qualified, properly qualified disciples, then automatically they will be directed by Supersoul to find that Sadguru who's already existing. Srila Prabhupada ki.